Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So this morning I kind of parsed out the four foundations of mindfulness. I think this afternoon would be a useful time to explore how the Buddha uses that same structure for mindfulness of breathing. The development of the breath as an object of meditation is not primarily a concentration object or an object specifically for making the mind focused and one-pointed, but it is it encompasses the whole range of experience of those four foundations of mindfulness: body, feeling, mind, mental qualities. And I think that's really helpful to be considering, because it's so often we get locked into, well, maybe not giving our minds enough room to explore, not giving our minds enough space to feel comfortable in the practice. We tend to come with certain expectations and ideas about what it really should be, and that rarely complies with what the Buddha actually had in mind. So to recognize that Or to me anyway, what I felt when I kind of realized that, and I've been a monk for quite a few years, but I feel like it finally dawned on me that, wow, I can do this, and I can do this too, you know, in meditation. I can let the mind explore and investigate, and it seems to create in reality, to me, what it does is give a much more solid container for the mind and the basis for insight then really grows when we have the range of experience of the body, feeling, mind, mental qualities to attend to. Which doesn't mean we have to be, say, every time we sit down in meditation that we have to be going through, because there are these 16 steps of mindfulness of breathing. It doesn't mean one has to do all of that, but it means we have a choice. What appears interesting, what appears worthy of exploration, we can then do that if it falls into those categories. Maybe one of the images or similes that is useful is the image that the Buddha gives of the foolish, inexperienced cook who works for is in the employ of the king or the king's minister, and prepares all these different kinds of foods, both spicy, not spicy, salty, not salty, some sweet or sour, or rich or not so rich. And then it's presented to the king, and the cook doesn't pay attention to what the king or the king's minister, what he eats, how much he eats of it, what he thinks of it, what he says of it, so that in not paying attention to that, then the cook doesn't get any bonuses, doesn't get any extra consideration from the king. Then the Buddha compares it to, say, a meditator or practitioner who picks up the themes of contemplation, of meditation, picks up the meditation object. And then he specifies even practicing within the four foundations of mindfulness, but doesn't take note of how the mind responds, how the mind reacts, and doesn't take up the theme of the mind itself in order to, in the sense, how did the mind work, what worked, what didn't work, what was the mind interested in, what was the mind neutral towards, what is it not at all kind of inspired by or even repelled by. So that when that's the case, then the practitioner doesn't reap the fruits of happiness and a pleasant abiding in the here and now, and doesn't reap the fruits of insight and knowledge. And then, of course, as is the Buddha's wont, then he speaks about the wise, experienced, skillful cook in the king's employ who does pay attention, who does take note of what the king takes, what's he interested in, what's he praise, what does he criticize, and then he's able to adjust what he prepares for the king, and then he reaps gifts and rewards and bonuses from his employment. And in the same way, a wise, experienced, skillful practitioner takes note of how the mind responds, how the mind reacts to the different contact and ways of engagement, whether it's interested, whether it's satisfied, whether it's restless, and one's able to, in that way, subdue the hindrances, relinquish attachments, and one reaps the fruits of pleasant abiding in the present moment and the fruits of insight and knowledge. So that I will make the assumption that you all are wise, experienced, skillful practitioners who are interested in the different things to pay attention to. And using that mindfulness of breathing as the basis of exploring those four foundations of mindfulness. And it was mentioned in the questions last night, the verbs that are used in conjunction with these 16 steps of mindfulness of breathing that are broken up into four tetrads, so each tetrad having four steps pertaining to body, feeling, mind, mental qualities. And it begins with the knowing a long breath. And breathing in a long breath, one knows one breathes in a long breath. Breathing out a long breath, one knows one breathes out a long breath. And the second step, breathing in a short breath, one knows one breathes in a short breath. Breathing out a short breath, one knows one breathes out a short breath. So that just knowing the rhythm of the breathing and the verb that is knowing. So that's the same verb. In the Pali, it's pajahanati. And so being used as a verb, knowing the long breath, knowing the short breath, knowing when it's coming in, knowing when it's going out. But it's also the verb that is, when it's made into a gerund, is the word banya. So what's usually translated as wisdom, but is better translated as discernment. So that then saying in the same way that breathing in a long breath, one discerns, one is breathing in a long breath. So that sense of discernment, knowing, is the operative activity that we engage in that as we begin to settle. And of course the Buddha has already kind of said, one goes to a quiet place, one sits in an appropriate posture and sets up mindfulness, bringing mindfulness to the fore, and then engaging that quality of discernment and knowing. And then beginning the third step is a change of verb, and that verb is, the operative verb through the rest of the instructions, and that is sikkhati, which means to train or to learn, to study. So it has that constellation of meanings. So that it isn't as if one's having to force the mind to, because in the same way that when one doesn't force the breath to be long or force the breath to be short, one can just pay attention to the natural rhythm. But with the sense of training or learning or using the different aspects of the instruction as a basis for, especially when in some cases where you're pointing to, say, something later in discourse where it's sort of experiencing rapture. I breathe in, experiencing rapture, I breathe out. Well, you might not be experiencing it at the time, but you can still train to see what comes up so that it's opening up possibilities. In the third step, it's sort of, training thus is experiencing the whole body. I breathe in, experiencing the whole body. I breathe out. And this is really connecting the breath and the knowing, the experiencing, the feeling of it, or sensitizing oneself to the breath within the whole body, sensitive to the whole body, experiencing the whole body. So that there's getting a feeling of an embodied experience as opposed to, disembodied, which sometimes we do that, and sometimes we even think that that's what we should be doing. But I think it is helpful to recognize just the practicality that the Buddha keeps returning to, and I think the Buddha was an immensely practical person and an incredibly practical teacher. He understood very clearly the limitations of the human condition, and is giving us the tools to deal with it skillfully, so that learning how to connect our awareness, our mindfulness, our clear seeing within the experience of the body. And just familiarizing oneself with the body, feeling at home in the body. I was, like I mentioned before, the walking meditation, of how so often the experience of walking is actually the experience of something sort of at the front of one's head pulling one through space and not really grounded in that full experience. So that similarly with the sitting meditation, to not just get absorbed and wrapped up in the world of one's mental proliferations and emotions and feelings, but to, what does it feel like in the body? What is it? What is the experience? And so that experiencing the whole body. As we do that, of course, there isn't really a need to be too tight in one's focus of one is paying attention to the breath, but pay attention to what is what's comfortable, sort of so that rhythm of the breath, or if it's comfortable at the, say, the tip of the nose, at the chest area, the abdomen, that doesn't preclude one from experiencing that within the body sensation, the body feeling experience. So that staying grounded within that feeling of the body and adjusting the posture, which in there, that sort of tips into the next step, which is calming the body formation. And this has a couple different possible meanings. And of course, one is the actual physical body, so that one is calming it. But then also there's discourses where the Buddha is saying that the bodily formation is the breath itself. Because it's the progenitor or the basic condition that's necessary to have a living, functioning human body, that you are breathing. Which is actually, say, when you take the first precept, panatipata, werlapmini sikapada, the panatipata is sort of a breathing being. refraining from taking a life of any living creature, it's a breathing being. Pana, same in the same manner, panasati, panatipata. Neat little sidebar, okay, we'll keep on track. Of course, when one is calming the breath, consciously calming it, settling it, soothing it, it's in conjunction with the body. That's the interface between sort of the conscious kind of effort at calming the breath, calming the body is there, because one has to, it goes both ways. In the sense, if the breath starts to calm down, the body will probably start to relax. But then one can also be attentive to relaxing the body, and the breath will start to calm. So it's they're working together. So to be attentive to how to accomplish that or work with that. So calming the bodily formation. Breathe in, calming the body formation, and breathe out. And that's, again, it's begins with that, say, the verb or the action, training thus. I'll breathe in, calming the bodily formation. Training thus, breathe out, calming the bodily formation. So it's a attention to that training, learning, working with. Again, that's, I say, as in the question last night of the person who felt that, say, when they use the word training, then there's a kind of already a kind of an effort that's a bit tight. So just to be observant to how we frame experience, and recognizing that there is a constellation of meanings that can be applied to these particular actions. But what the Buddha would like to see us accomplish with it is freedom from suffering. So one is not training thus, I will breathe in, making more suffering. training thus, so I'll breathe out, making more suffering. It's not really the program. So that sense of, okay, this is, we're finding ways that allows us to understand the process and to establish clarity and understanding. The next step moves into the section on feeling, and the Buddha similarly, as in training thus, I'm breathing in, experiencing joy, experiencing rapture, Beatty in the Pali, breathing out, experiencing joy or rapture. So that tends to be a direct result of calming. With that calming the breath, calming the body, calming the whole body-mind complex, there's a kind of a very deep relaxing, releasing, and allows a sense of kind of joy to come up and to create space for that, be ready for that to be a part of our practice. I can remember for myself when I, early days of meditation and practice, I just put so much effort in that I started to dread sitting meditation, because it was a miserable experience. So that kind of step back. That's where I ended up doing a lot of walking meditation, and then was able to kind of recalibrate. But that's that kind of being too forceful, being too kind of striving too much. And sometimes it's useful, but it has its drawbacks as well. But certainly in the classical laying out of the path of practice, the Buddha is saying, experiencing rapture when breathes in, experiencing rapture when breathes out. And the second one, experiencing pleasure when breathes in, experiencing pleasure when breathes out. The first quality is piti, as joy, rapture. The second is sukha, which is pleasure, happiness. And it tends to be, in English they're a bit similar, but the in the Pali language, then the that quality of piti tends to be more kind of a mental quality. There's a bit of excitement there. Exhilaration is a very good word as well. There's exhilarating quality. Whereas with the sukha, there's a deeper settling and it's more body-based. The body's experiencing this tremendous sense of pleasure and well-being, along with the mind as well. The next step is the training thus, experiencing the mental formation. So when I spoke of the bodily formation, it's kaya sankhara, and then the mental formations are citta sankhara. As one breathes in, experiencing the mental formations, breathing out, experiencing the mental formations. This is in the section on feeling, on Vedana, when the Buddha points to say the mental formation. Sankhara is both a formation, but it's also that which forms. So that maybe a better word is experiencing the mind conditioner. So it's that which conditions the mind. I breathe in, experiencing the mind conditioner. I breathe out. So that's what's conditioning the mind. And what conditions our mind is feeling and perception. Every mental state that we have has its associated feeling, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, and has a perception, sanya. There's a memory association. Maybe association is a good word, because it's pre-verbal. It's a pre-verbal function of the mind. And it's with that feeling and association that thoughts form out of that. And that's what forms the movement of the mind. So that sense of being, this is what is conditioning the mind in terms of its thought and content. And it's that underlying experience of a feeling and association, perception, memory. And then the last step in that tetrad is, say training thus, calming the mind conditioner. I breathe in, calming the mind conditioner. I breathe out. So there's a conscious application of the mind to calming, settling, allowing to settle. So, and you're doing it in conjunction with, you're knowing that the breath is coming in, the breath is going out. You're attuned to that rhythm of the breath. It's not disassociated. To me, that's one of the things that kind of a takeaway bit is that this whole process of investigation of body, feeling, mind, mental qualities is in conjunction with the experience of the rhythm of the breath as it comes in, breath as it goes out. One is attuned and tuning into the breath as a fundamental basis of that training or of that learning, of that working with these natural conditions, having a body, having a mind, and being able to learn from that. So that taking those building blocks of the moods and movement of the mind and creating a wedge in there real quick, letting it settle, letting it clarify. It goes into the next tetrad of, again, a sort of training thus, experiencing the mind. I breathe in, experiencing the mind. I breathe out. So just the word citta. As also that word that I've been using, experiencing, Bhikkhu Bodhi translates it like that. Ajahn Jeff translates it as sensitive to. So sensitive to the mind, I breathe in. Sensitive to the mind, I breathe out. And it comes up with, in the body, feeling, mind, that kind of verb of experience. And in the Pali, it's patisangveti. And veti is the same root as vedana, feeling. And pati and sang are like, they bump it up a bit more, ratchet it up a bit more. So that feeling fully. Experiencing. So that experiencing the mind, sensitive to the mind, I breathe in. And it comes back to how the Buddha, encouraged us to hold that experience of, within the Satipatthana, experiencing whether the mind has greed, free from greed, has anger, free from anger, has delusions, free from delusions, contracted, expanded, concentrated, scattered, with knowledge, without knowledge. There's a huge range that we can be attentive to and sensitive to. But it's in the context of it's breathing in, breathing out. Let's see. The next step is gladdening the mind. The verb is pamodayam, which is when it becomes a noun, it's usually translated as delight. And so that gladdening the mind, I breathe in. Gladdening the mind, I breathe out. Or delighting the mind, I breathe in. Delighting the mind, I breathe out. Again, one's degree of accomplishment is not measured of, into the, how miserable one can make oneself. It's really, you have to pay attention to how to gladden the mind, how to brighten it, how to make it light. We obviously contemplate suffering, but we don't have to suffer all the time. So that consciously gladdening the mind is what it energizes the system, and it's important to recognize its place, and also that the Buddha very overtly puts it there that the we can do that. We've got permission to enjoy our meditation. So that is making that conscious, because that's something that one is gains energy and interest as there is that sense of delight, and the heart is gladdened by the perspectives and the experience that we have. The next step is sort of settling the mind. I breathe in, settling the mind, I breathe out. Or they could translate it as concentrating the mind. It's the same word, samodhyam. It's the same word as samadhi. But settling is to me a more useful image than concentrating. It's a certain tightness that one feels with trying to concentrate the mind. And then training thus, releasing the mind, I breathe in, releasing the mind, I breathe out. So that as one is with the in-breath, the experience of the in-breath, experience of the out-breath, releasing the things that are impeding or obstructing the settled quality of the mind. Recognizing, when one's experiencing and knowing the mind, you see more clearly, okay, there's a thought or a mood of kind of attachment or of irritation or dullness, whatever, and we can release it. We don't have to kind of pounce on it and annihilate and destroy it. Just release it. Let it go out with the out-breath and be present with that activity of attending to each in-breath and each out-breath. It allows for a lot more spaciousness. Then the last tetrad is around the tetrad of Dhamma, or mental qualities, phenomena. And the verbs in this one are all kind of contemplating, investigating. So contemplating impermanence, contemplating anicca, contemplating uncertainty. I breathe in, contemplating uncertainty, I breathe out. So that bringing up that perspective of the impermanent, changing, unstable, uncertain nature of all physical, mental phenomena. And this is moving into the realm of insight and the realm of understanding. But it's not so sort of distant, and it's not, a purely intellectual pursuit, because you're still grounded in the experience of the breath. Contemplating impermanence, I breathe in. Contemplating impermanence, I breathe out. Contemplating dispassion, I breathe in. Contemplating dispassion, I breathe out. The word is viraka, and it's oftentimes translated as fading away. And that's that's a useful kind of image to bring to the mind, in the sense of Is there like dispassion, cooling, and then a fading away of the compulsions of the mind, the compulsions of the heart. And so there's this very deep settling. So contemplating the aspects of dispassion and fading away. And it can be in terms of the an object, it can be in terms of the subject itself, ourselves, our own heart, how we experience it. But that reflection and contemplation on dispassion. Contemplating cessation. I breathe in, contemplating cessation, I breathe out. And the word is Nirodha. Cessation is the most consistent translation, so that the cessation, the ending of things. You know, I think the pull of the mind, or the incredibly deep-seated habit of the mind, is this pull toward becoming, to being, to existence, and to consciously counter that with that contemplating cessation. I breathe in. So that paying attention to the endings of things, paying attention to the ending of the breath, paying attention, the ending of the in-breath, paying attention to the ending of the out-breath, paying attention to even the ending of that kind of gap in between. There's this constant experience of cessation that is there, contemplating the cessation, the ending of the just of a thought, and just thinking, and sometimes even just actually bringing up a thought, because you think of just like thinking of something, thinking of say tea this afternoon, something happening, and then you bring that to mind. And one, it's impermanent. It's going to change. It's not going to be. Can't hold it there. And then it ends. And then to actually contemplate the ending. Contemplate the ending. It's just like or bringing up the thought of oneself and sort of okay, me. The thought of me. Is that a permanent phenomena? Is that thought of, okay, me? And then it ends, it slips away. There's a cessation that's always going to happen. And so that contemplating cessation, and that recognition of the truth or the natural quality of cessation. And with cessation, by attending to cessation, feeling comfortable with cessation, because the compulsion within the mind, one actually, even if one experiences the ending of things, we get antsy real quick to fill it, fill that gap, fill that hole. And let's not experience too much cessation here. So that to experimenting with it and feeling comfortable with it, seeing the possibility that's inherent within cessation. There's a tremendous amount of peace available there. It's an experiment. And then the last quality is contemplating relinquishment. I breathe in, contemplating relinquishment, I breathe out. And in the word that's used, patinisaka, is mostly, its primary meaning, of course, is relinquishment of self, that relinquishing of that the sense of self, of me, of mine, allowing that sticky grip of the I position, to loosen that grip, contemplating relinquishment. And, you know, in doing that, you know, the one's opening up the possibility of incredible freedom. So this whole kind of structure of the 16 steps of Anapanasati are, you know, we've got a tremendous amount that we can be working with. And it's not necessary to be, say, working from step 1 to 16 in sequence all the time. One can be picking up any particular part at any time. So a lot of it is, you know, what is it that a wise, experienced, skillful meditator would pick up? the picking up the theme of the mind, what the mind is interested in, or what it needs, because sometimes those are two different things. We might be interested in some kind of distraction, but it might not be useful, so that we need to supply a alternative for the mind to dwell in and to work with. So that training of our hearts with this structure of the four foundations of mindfulness of breathing, yeah, it's a very concrete, solid structure that has a lot of flexibility and has a lot of possibility, so that I just encourage people to explore that and offer that for reflection this afternoon.
Yeah.